This is a reading of The Education of the Child in Early Lectures on Education, Part 2, Lecture 1, Teaching from a Foundation of Spiritual Insight, given in Berlin, May 14, 1906. I have often repudiated prejudices that foster the idea of theosophy as foreign to practical life. On the contrary, I have often spoken of how theosophy can lead us into practical life, because it teaches the laws that continuously form life around us. If you know only the laws of ordinary life, then you know only a small part of life. The major portion lies in those things hidden in life, that is, hidden from ordinary senses. People will soon recognize that to live better they must study the hidden worlds, since the materialistic approach leads to a crisis in nearly every area, but primarily in health care and education. The question arises of how we should educate people in the coming generations. Materialism leads to a crisis in all important social, political, and cultural questions, since if we followed this path, life would eventually be such that we would no longer know how to help ourselves. To illustrate this, I would like to say a few things of general interest about the question of education. Those who consider education in a materialistic way will easily come to distorted conclusions. They will fail to consider the strong regularities of life, and will therefore not consider the existence of clearly delineated periods of life. They simply cannot imagine, for example, why the period of childhood, ending around age 6 to 8 years, is so fundamentally different from the period beginning at approximately age 7 and continuing until puberty. If you have no idea of what happens to people during this time, you cannot imagine how important it is to observe it accurately. It is not of little importance to know what people are like during the first 3 periods of life. The first period proceeds until 6 to 8 years of age, the second until the age of 14 or 15, and the following period includes the next 7 to 8 years. We need to study these 3 stages in human life very accurately, not just externally, but also from the standpoint of spiritual science, for spiritual science concerns itself with those worlds hidden from the ordinary senses. You know that the human being does not consist of only the physical body. The human being also consists of an etheric body, which forms the basis of the physical and has a similar shape, and an astral body, which for the clairvoyant appears similar to a cloud, and in which the first 2 bodies are embedded. Within these we find the vehicle of the I, capital. We want to look more closely at these 3 bodies of the developing human being. If you want to create a complete picture of the human being, then you must recall that a time exists before we can see people physically, that is, the time before birth, when the child lives in the mother's body. On a purely physical level, you must differentiate clearly between the period before birth and the following periods, since the child could not live if born too early, if the child were to enter the ordinarily visible world too early. The child could not live because the sense organs, the means of interacting with the outer world, are not yet well enough developed. Those organs, the eyes, ears, and everything needed to live in the physical world, develop during the time before birth, while the child is still embraced by the mother's body. The child cannot come into contact with the physical world before its organs develop sufficiently within the protective mantle of another physical body. Birth occurs when a child is mature enough to encounter the physical environment without a protective mantle. We cannot say the same of the etheric and astral bodies. They are not nearly developed to the degree that they could come into direct contact with the physical surroundings. During the period from birth until about 7 years of age, the etheric body undergoes a process similar to that undergone by the physical body before birth. Only at the end of that time can we say that the etheric body is born. In the same way, the astral body is born at the age of 14 or 15, and can then unfold its free and independent activity in the world. you need to be aware that we may not place any particular demands on the etheric body until the age of 7, nor on the astral body until the age of 14. Exposing the baby's etheric body to the brutal demands of the world would be the same as exposing the fetus to the physical world in the 5th month of pregnancy, although we could not see it so readily. The same is true of exposing the astral body before the age of 14. Allow me to restate what I have just said. Until the age of 7, only the physical body is developed well enough to withstand the full effects of the world. Until that time, the etheric body is so occupied with its own development that it would be detrimental to try to affect it. Until then, we may, therefore, work only with the physical body. From the age of 7 until 14, we may take up the development of the etheric body, and only beginning with the age of 15 can we work upon the astral body. To affect the human physical body means to provide the child with external stimuli. Such impressions act to develop the physical body, and for this reason, we can hardly compensate for things neglected before the age of 7. Until the age of 7, the physical body exists in a state that requires external sense impressions to develop it. If a child's eye, EYE, sees only beautiful things until the age of 7, the eye will develop so that it retains a feeling for beauty throughout life. Afterward, the child's sense of beauty can no longer develop in the same way. What you say to a child and what you do until the age of 7 are much less important than the environment you create, what the child sees and hears. During this time, we must use external stimuli to support the child's inner growth. The child's free spirit creates a human figure from a piece of wood, using only a couple of holes and some marks for the eyes, nose, and mouth. If you give a child a beautiful doll, then the child becomes bound to it. The child's inner spirit clings to it and cannot develop its own activity. In this way, children almost entirely lose their imaginative powers. It is essentially the same with all impressions of the sense-perceptible world. Who you are in the presence of the child, what the child sees or hears, is important. The child will become a good person when surrounded by good people. Children imitate their surroundings. We must place particular value upon learning by example and the child's capacity to imitate. Thus, the correct thing to do is to act so the child can imitate as much as possible. In that sense, we must emphasize the child's physical development between the 1st and 7th year. During that period, we cannot affect the higher bodies through educational methods, quite certainly not through conscious education. You affect these bodies through who you are, insofar as they are not occupied with their own development. People can activate the child's good sense through their own good sense. Just as the mother's healthy body has a healthy effect upon the child's body, the teacher must attempt to be a well-rounded and self-contained person, to have high and good thoughts while in the presence of the child. At the age of 7, the period begins when you can deliberately affect the etheric body. Here, two things connected with the development of the etheric body come into consideration, that is to say, habit and memory. The development of the etheric body depends on habits and remembrances. For this reason, you should try to give children a firm foundation for life, anchored in good habits. People who act differently every day, who lack a stable basis for their deeds, will later lack character. A task to fulfill between the ages of 7 and 14 is to create a basic set of habits and to stimulate memory development. Children need to learn upright habits and to have a rich store of memorized knowledge. It is an erroneous belief of our materialistic times that very young children should learn to decide for themselves. On the contrary, we should do everything possible to hinder that. During this period of childhood, children should learn through authority. During the 2nd 7-year period, people should instruct children and not teach through example. We form a strong memory, not by explaining all the whys and wherefores, but through authority. We must surround children with people they can count on, people they can trust, people who can awaken in children a belief in the authority they hold. Only after this stage of life should we guide children into their capacity for judgment and independent reason. By freeing the child from the limitations imposed by authority, you rob the etheric body of the possibility of a well-founded development. During the second seven-year period, it is best to give children examples and analogies, not proofs and conclusions. Conclusions affect the astral body, which is not yet free to receive them. You should tell children about great people, tell them in a way that great historical figures become examples for them. The same is true concerning questions of death and birth. If you can draw examples from nature, you will see what can be accomplished. You could show children a caterpillar, how it spins a cocoon and afterward a butterfly emerges. This is a wonderful example of how the child is created from the mother. You can accomplish a great deal if you use examples from nature. It is just as important to teach children moral parables and not moral rules. We can clearly see this in a few sayings from Pythagoras. Instead of saying, "If you want to accomplish something, concern with things that you can see from the start will only be futile," Pythagoras simply said, "Don't strike at fire with your sword." In another example, instead of saying, "Don't meddle with things you know nothing about," Pythagoras said, "Keep your bean." Along with the physical meaning, there is also a moral meaning here. In ancient Greece, when people needed to make a decision, they passed out black and white beans, and then counted the number of beans of each color returned. That is how they took votes. In this sense, instead of saying, "Don't meddle in public affairs you know nothing about," Pythagoras said simply, "Keep your bean." In this way, you can appeal to the formative forces of imagination, and not to those of the intellect. The more you use pictures, the more you affect the child. Goethe's mother could not have done anything better for him than to tell moral stories. She never preached at him. Sometimes she did not finish the story, so he made up the ending himself. If we force children into critical thinking before the age of 14, it is particularly disadvantageous for them and forces them to create their own conclusions or lose the well-intended power of the surrounding persons of authority. It is very bad if children cannot look up to anyone. The etheric body becomes stunted, weak, and shallow from lack of good examples on which to build. It is also particularly bad if children prematurely determine their religion and draw conclusions about the world. Children can do this only when their astral bodies can unfold freely. The more we protect children from premature judgmental and critical activities, the better it is for them. When the child's astral body has not yet become free, a wise teacher attempts to make reality comprehensible through the events themselves. Wise teachers do not demand a firm decision about religious confession, as is increasingly the common way of materialistic education. The chaotic conditions between the religious confessions would quickly dissolve if we adhered to this more often. We should develop the capacity for judgment and reason as late as possible, only after the children's sense of individuality awakens, that is, when the astral body emerges. Before then, children should not decide for themselves whom they believe, but instead, that should be a given. In the years that follow, the interrelationships of the sexes most strongly express individuality, that is, when one individual feels drawn to another. You can see that if you study the three human bodies properly, you will find a practical basis for the proper education of children. Spiritual science is not impractical, not something living in the clouds. Rather, spiritual science can provide the best guide for working with life. That is precisely why we need a deepening of spiritual scientific insight today, since without it, humanity would reach a dead end. People today criticize the past, saying children were not called on at an early enough age to decide about God and the world, but in reality that was a healthy instinct. Now we must achieve that instinctive knowledge more consciously. The instinctive knowledge of earlier times disappeared, and along with it a certain feeling of certainty about life's details. On the other hand, we cannot suddenly damn humanity. Footnote, the original is unclear at this point. If we had strictly followed the dictates of materialism concerning education, medicine, justice, and so on, then human society would have fallen apart long ago. However, we did not destroy everything, and some of the past still remains alive. We need the spiritual scientific movement because materialism would, of necessity, lead people to a dead end. Teachers who still have a feeling for the child's soul suffocate under a school bureaucracy and regulations that are only caricatures of what should actually exist, and they arise from a superstitious belief that teachers should deal only with the physical body. This belief exists despite their own religious beliefs. Footnote, the original is unclear at this point. End of footnote. It is important that people gain a sense of the spiritual and what exists beyond sense-perceptible life. Those who cling to educational formulas will never find the right things to do. They cling to traditional church dogmas and don't want to know anything about spiritual development. But we seek spiritual development, since the answers to today's needs must come from the spiritual worlds. The fruits of materialism only cause illness in the human physical and higher bodies. We cannot avoid a major crisis if people do not take up a spiritual deepening. Many things point clearly to important decisions now being made within our society, but you must look beneath the surface. Superficial considerations are insufficient. We cannot do away so easily with people's spiritual desires and tendencies. Spiritualism meets the needs of some people who have such desires, but it attempts materialistically to prove spiritual existence. The Catholic Church has a remarkable relationship to spiritualism, given that the Church should be concerned only with spiritual matters, and that every act of the Church should reflect the Spirit. A recent event is very curious. A member of the Church sought material proof of the existence of the Spirit. A book by Lapponi, the Pope's personal physician, recently appeared in which he supports spiritualism. This is so remarkable because the book apparently addresses people who are no longer spiritually sensitive. They need clear material proof for the existence of a spiritual world. We certainly have something to think about when the Pope's personal physician openly supports spiritualism. Clearly, he wants to know that the spiritual world exists, but he has no understanding of the Church's teachings about the spiritual world. In this way, materialism sneaks into religion, into what should not be materialistic at all. You can see from this the importance of a movement such as ours, which appeals to real human understanding of the Spirit without asceticism and withdrawal from life, that continually attempts to render the practicality of spiritual life comprehensible. We should not, however, ask how we can quickly develop occult powers or how we can encapsulate ourselves so that we do not encounter reality. Anyone who asks such questions is only an egoist, no more than a spiritual gourmet. If you want to partake only in what you find spiritually pleasing, then you are only slightly more subtle than someone who begins the day with a gourmet breakfast. Someone with jaded physical taste often creates the tastiest spiritual dishes. In the proper sense, you are a theosophist only if you exert yourself to comprehend and serve life. Parents are theosophically minded when they see that their task is to support their children at every step on the path of development. Don't ask, how can we do... Don't ask, quote, how can we do that these days, unquote. You should know that the important thing is to consciously remember that the soul is eternal. People readily believe in eternal life, a life they want to begin as quickly as possible after death. For those truly convinced of the eternity of the soul, the period between 2 and 80 years of age is only 78 years. It has but little significance compared to eternity. Such people believe in eternal existence and feel the need for patience. We must become accustomed to acting in the service of all humanity. It is not so important that we immediately use what we learn. Instead, we must continue to try to use it, and eventually we will find some small area of application. We will never achieve this if we merely criticize everything. It is better to do whatever we can and not complain about how little we can use of what we have learned, rather than to do nothing at all. We should accept this in our souls as something truly practical. When we work in that way with spiritual science, our lives will automatically change. Without realizing it, people can change the world when they become theosophists. The main thing is that we gain a true understanding of spiritual science, and then to live by it. That is the wise thing to do, since it is then applied in life, and the remainder will happen by itself. A mother, a teacher, a theosophist will automatically act differently from one who is not aware. If you know what a human being truly is, then you will instinctively see the changes in the developing child. Most important, however, is that through genuine theosophical insight, all the hypocrisy will cease, such as the tomfoolery the great people around us practice and transform into seriousness when they address questions of raising children. This happens because people have no faith in the spirit. Here we have a small insight into spiritual science. It is a part of practical life. We can see that the opponent's claim that it distances us from life is only nonsense. In truth, it leads us into life. Every narrow-minded Tom, Dick, and Harry believe they are above theosophy when they speak about it. But a time will come when they will think differently. In the future, such people will be called reactionaries, unable to move into the future. People who did not want to know about practical life or what theosophy could tell us about the spirit. It will be said that they had no desire to learn about practicality from the theosophical convictions living and burning within us. The end of the lecture.